We open by staring down the length of an impossibly long hallway. The marble flooring reflects in blurs the bright lighting overhead. To the left, to the right, nondescript rust-colored doors line the white walls, each bearing their own nameplates. Number 132. Number 133. Number 134. We close in on the end of the hall, aiming for a similarly rust-colored door that's nameplate reads X-SPLSH. And we hear it whistling. The door at the end of the hall is cracked open. Beyond, the whistling gets louder as we enter a stairwell leading down. To our right, a man dressed in military fatigues lays crumbled on the ground, blood steadily leaking from a puncture wound in his throat. His rifle lays blood-soaked and untouched nearby. The stairs down are iron. The walls, stone. The air breathes like that of a public pool. Humid and chemically sickening. When we reach the bottom, we find a new door, this time left open. The corpse of another guard discarded in the corner. In the room beyond, we see the back of an average-sized man dressed in a baseball cap and a maintenance uniform. In front of him, a large glass tank filled with some bluish liquid contains a person, floating, unmoving. The nondescript man makes several wide and arching motions with his right hand until scratched into the tank's glass reads the letters N-M-H. He then turns and walks towards us, leaving the room, whistling the entire time. His cap arched down, we cannot see his face, but his right hand raises, and in one quick motion, he snaps his fingers. The tank shatters. Its prisoner is sent cascading among liquid and glass to the ground, and when everything settles, the prisoner stands. Short, dark hair, a wet and greasy mess, face little more than skin pulled gaunt over pronounced cheekbones and deep eye sockets. He stretches, as if getting used to his body for the first time, and cackles as he too walks towards us. Cuts from the broken glass lace his thin body, and blood trickles down from the wounds. When his blood finally hits the ground, it sizzles and steams as if eating away at the cement floor. When he reaches the stairs, the prisoner all at once ceases his laughter.
I guess it's time once again to make a splash.
I'm doing this intro completely off the cuff. No rehearsals. No, nothing written down. This is raw and dirty, just the way we like it.
Are we still doing phrasing, though?
Oh, we will never not be doing phrasing.
Then phrasing.
Phrasing's forever. Okay, great. That's hilarious. I love it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Critically Accursed podcast. I'm Chris, the person running the podcast and the game that you're about to listen to. And joining me today is one of my five friends. His name is Alex. Alex, say hello.
Hello.
Nice. What a good boy.
Oh, do I get extra scratches now?
Oh, you get extra XP. Yeah, and I'll throw in an extra dog biscuit in your mailbox because we can't you know, come into contact anymore. It's a quarantine.
God, I'm such a good boy. So,
Alex and I are here today to, well, we're here today in post to record the intro to his Masks Prelude. Masks is a Powered by the Apocalypse tabletop system centered on heroes, teenage heroes who have feelings. And there's a whole bunch of drama surrounding these heroes. Alex, I hear that you were once a teenager.
Lies.
Oh, well.
Jake's feeding you misinformation.
Okay. Well, I guess you'll just have to keep pretending to have once been a teenager to really get into the mood and theming of this game.
It's okay. I've watched a lot of movies and TV.
Oh, okay. Good, good, good. So you're familiar with the art of lying for entertainment. In this fancy little prelude that people are going to listen to, you are playing the playbook, which is basically a character class in this system, and the playbook is the delinquents. Can you tell me what our audience is in for with your character, with the delinquents of the party?
So for every hero, there has to be someone who throws the wrench in the mix. I'm the wrench. When everything's going smoothly, I gotta throw them the curveball.
So are you an anti-hero or are you just a douchebag? Also, in-game, are you an anti-hero or are you just a douchebag?
Well, IRL, I think I'm definitely anti-hero. In-game, I'm going to start as a douchebag, but hopefully grow over the course of the game.
Into an anti-hero?
I haven't decided.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. The name of the game is Sabotage, and everyone's going to have a bad time because of you. Great. Matt's going to love it.
Cue the clip of Sabotage.
All right. Well, Alex, I wanted to keep this short and sweet. Do you have anything you want to say before I cut off this future recording of us? Before I cut off this intro and let these people dive into our little prelude.
If you enjoy this content, you should check out our YouTube channel. Like, subscribe, comment. We're trying to get back up to 50.
I'm cutting the shameless advertising.
Never cut the shameless advertising. Someone's got to do it, and goddamn I will.
Stop being such an ad slut. We haven't touched that YouTube channel in like a year and a half.
I'm ready for the Raid Shadow Legends ad. Guys, you won't believe my clan I've got going in Raid. It is just the most innovative game ever since 2019.
Yeah, Raid Shadow Legends. Reach out, dogs. Let's go. Let's talk money. Yeah, why not? We can sell out before we even begin. That sounds legit.
Hey, I hear they offer like $4,000 per ad.
Wow.
I'd take it.
Yeah, we'd have to split it between us, though. Just you and me, not anyone else in the podcast. Yeah, it's our idea. Mostly yours, but I'm taking it.
That's fine. You own the channel.
Now, with that recorded forever, I'm going to take that as a contract. So when Raid Shadow Legends reaches out to us for some sick advertisements, but we'll know what the deal is.
Honestly, even if this isn't super successful, I wouldn't be surprised if we got an email from Raid.
Actually, wait, I just got an email. Hold on.
Holy shit, they're starting already.
It's from Raid Shadow Legends. Really?
Send me the script.
We understand you're in the process of recording a tabletop podcast, which is all the hot shit these days. Wouldn't you like $4,000 to post an advertisement at the front of one of your podcast episodes? Yeah, all right, cool. That's weird, but I'll do it.
It's okay. I can pretend to be hyped about a game I'll never, ever really play.
I don't even know if it's a real game. It just sounds like more like a myth that everyone talks about.
No, Seth actually played it. He said it was kind of fun until you got up to the higher levels.
God, what a loser. Seth,
I just don't understand games that like are like, well, you could play our game or we can play it for you while you go do other things.
Yeah, I will pay them to have them play the game that I bought to play.
No, it's free to start.
But it's not free to end, is it?
By the end game, they always try to milk you for some money.
Get this super cool armor by linking your bank account to your game account. What? The only gearbox that I want is one that comes in a shoebox and has a whole bunch of origami and a handgun in it. And the origami better have cryptic messages about how I can save my son, Sean, from drowning.
Jason!
It's the only one I'm interested in. Ah, see? Full circle. We went right back around to the YouTube thing. Great. Good. If you found that joke funny, then you remember Heavy Rain. And we did a Let's Play of Heavy Rain on our really shitty YouTube channel. Just search Critically Accursed. Oh, fuck. Now I'm doing it.
Ah, damn see? It. It no, spreads. The ads are
done.
Easy.
No, I'm canceling this intro. We're done, Alex. We're done. I'm thinking that I kind of want, for the prelude, to explore Todd's, like, first few days of high school. He's a freshman. I believe you have him pegged as 14 years old. From the sounds of it, he's going into high school with his powers. And yep. I think kind of seeing this character get introduced to a new environment to go to on a day-to-day basis and kind of see how he adjusts or if he adjusts and what happens from there would make a good starting point for him. So, as per usual, this story takes place in Horizon City in the year 2172. Horizon City is this pillar of future societies. It's a city that was built from the ground up at a time that allowed it to naturally take on advancements in science, advancements in culture, advancements in politics. Outside of being a futuristic setting, this is also a setting in which fantastic elements are relatively commonplace. Not so much that you see like millions of people flying through the sky every day, but enough where a person with blue skin on the street doesn't really turn heads anymore. Or someone playing with fire on their fingertips isn't seen as anything too crazy or out of the ordinary. This is a world where alien species exist, alternate dimensions have been established, and the world has probably been invaded once or twice. It's a world literally where anything is possible. And we are stuck in high school. This great, amazing future world, and we are going to high school. So the hero question mark of our story today is Todd Tabor. I think in order to get a thorough understanding of who Todd is and the things he does, the drama that surrounds him, is I need to get an understanding of what his day-to-day life looks like. And if you think that there's going to be a dramatic difference between going from like the eighth grade to being a freshman in high school, I kind of want to see you describe a comparison between the two. Like, what's the end of the school year look like in the eighth grade compared to the beginning of the school year in high school? If you don't think there's going to be much of a difference, you know, if you think he's going to kind of maintain the same thing he's been doing, then you can just give me kind of a day-to-day rundown for high school, I guess, because that's where we're at.
I think the first few days will probably be jarring. Just a little bit, at least, seeing as it's probably going from a little bit of a different environment, moving around more, trying to find your way around the new campus, potentially even meeting new kids, because he may not have necessarily moved forward with kids he used to go to school with to where he's going now. But otherwise, he probably doesn't do too much different from what he used to do. He'd have his breakfast in the morning. Parents, either if they're off, they're sleeping. If not, they're already gone for the day working. His sister is in Talia is in charge of waking him up in the mornings, getting him out of bed, because God knows that's going to take at least half hour, 45 minutes.
She routinely comes in with cups of cold water just to splash in her face because she doesn't have time for that shit anymore.
Yeah, and then lately he's taken to using his powers to, while she's in the shower, going in and flushing the toilet just to get back at her.
Wonderful dick move. Great.
He'll eat his stimulated bran flakes since, you know, food shortages and all that with the growing population.
Oh, we can grow bran flakes in petri dishes now.
Yeah, but you know how expensive that stuff is? It's like cents.
It's like cents. So he eats his petri dish bran flakes.
And now that he's going to school, high school, Talio has taken to walking him there, so she knows he's actually at least making it to the building and going inside.
Okay, doing pretty much as much as she can to encourage you to actually go to school.
Yes.
Right, even though she kind of knows that, like, you could walk in, turn a corner, and just, like, disappear.
Which I'm sure he does after a few days, especially the introduction period for classes. No one ever learns anything on the first day of school.
Oh, no, it's a huge waste of time.
So he probably goes in for 15 minutes to each class, says the hi, here's, this is my name. And then he says he's going to the bathroom when he just goes to walk around and try and learn the layout of the school.
Mm-hmm.
Find the best exits where cameras aren't pointed.
Right.
There aren't many, but he's found a few spots.
Sure. Couldn't he just teleport his way out?
You'd like to think so, but I'd want to say there are definitely some sort of sensors in the school for when a kid is using their powers if they are they have the superhuman abilities. I'd assume like each door has some sort of sensor, and he's done his best to find like older ones that have busted ones.
And what does he do when he cuts class?
Since it's just a few minutes away, he heads downtown to one of his normal hangouts in a park, or just likes to people watch and wait and see if an opportunity arises to do something he considers heroic.
But other people probably would find mischievous. So once school is over, what's after school plans?
After school, if he has stayed through the day, he's escorted back home with Talia. She tries to sit with him to make sure he does any home to do his homework. He lollygags his ass off to the point where when she finishes, she just has to leave the table to take care of herself. I'm guessing she probably has a part-time job at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So he waits till she has to leave, and he just will go and either watch a little TV or maybe see if Robbie Pepper wants to hang out.
Gotcha. And Robbie Pepper is basically, is he your best friend at this point? Is he like the guy you go to hang out with?
He's probably one of my only friends. Probably one of those situations where he's my best friend because he's one of the few people who can handle me.
I would like to ask you one question that concerns the setting. It's 150 years in the future from where we currently stand, and I would like you to tell me one interesting thing about the setting. Something, it could be something regarding technology, something regarding the culture, the people, something that's established either in Horizon City or across the world.
You know what? I'm going to make the world a nicer place, Chris. No racism here.
There's no more racism?
No more racism. With the folding of realities allowing extra-dimensional beings to pass through, aliens to come to the planet, racism has finally dissolved.
Warms the heart. Good. I've made a note of that. And the next thing that I would like to do is, I want to focus in on Todd's first day of high school. Now, you already gave me the rundown of kind of how this probably would look, but what I'm interested in doing is not only focusing on this very first day of high school, this huge life events, but I'm also interested in seeing if you and I could describe this day from beginning to end kind of as if it were a page or two of a comic book. Starting with the first panel being maybe him in bed, a sloppy bed, you know, one like bare leg hanging out of the cover off the side or whatever. And then like the next panel.
He's got the wife beater shirt on.
Yeah.
But they stopped calling them those. Everything's just tank tops now.
Even long sleeve t-shirts are tank tops now for some reason. All shirts are tank tops. That's
change my racism thing to that.
To that. That's the answer I want Matt or Danielle to give me. Something just stupid. Like all shirts are now referred to tank tops. I'm like, why? Well, okay. Yeah. Cool. So yeah, from that starting point, take me away. Just give me the first few pages of Todd's first comic.
So the waking up, there's probably the alarm blaring. In the next one, flashes back to him turning over. The fourth panel, the water being poured and him getting up soaked again.
So there's like a shot of him like sitting up in bed and just like
water dripping.
Right. Does he have longer hair?
Yeah, I want to say he has longer hair. Not quite like I have. Maybe a bit shorter than that.
Okay. Now, for reference to people who can't see you.
I've got hair down to my shoulders, basically. Okay. Probably like to the bottom of his ears.
Okay. And what color is his hair?
It is a very light brown, nearing that dirty blonde, but just a little darker.
Cool. So he's like sitting up in bed and his hair is all just like soaking wet. There's probably a glimpse of like her leading out of the room because she only like swung in, threw water in her face, and immediately like pivoted and left.
Then a panel of him reaching into his bedside table, lighting up a cigarette, and then after the puff, it's going to be a long day.
Now, tell me, is that a thought bubble or a speech bubble?
Oh, it's definitely a speech bubble.
Yeah, so it's just him sitting on the edge of his bed with a cigarette held up against his lips. The whole room probably just looks completely disheveled, including him.
Absolutely. Nothing is kept clean in here.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good visual.
Probably skipping ahead to arriving at school. Maybe a little that little time bubble saying that it's like 7:35, so they got like 10 minutes before the start of school. They're arriving at the very front of it. Maybe Talia walking him to his first class and says, behave.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask you for two descriptions here. One, what does your sister look like?
I actually think that she's probably, even though she's dressed in more tattered clothes, similar to what Todd's wearing, obvious hand-me-downs maybe from back when her mom was younger. But she is relatively pretty. Full round eyes, small nose, maybe some freckles on each cheek, long, probably mid-back hair. She probably has the blonde hair that our mother would have. Doesn't do much with makeup, since we can't really afford it. Instead of a backpack, she's got like one of those side satchels.
So, yeah, there's the one panel where she's like almost like wagging a finger at your face, telling you to not be an asshole today.
And then the response of, you're not my mom.
Yeah, so actually, I think her response to that is just like giving Todd a stern look and just like very, she basically says, leave our parents out of this before storming off.
He'll give a little smile and walk into the room. The next panels, I'd assume, are just a little montage of each different classroom, the different teachers that he meets throughout the day.
Can I offer a suggestion? So before you described that you don't learn anything in these classes on the first day, right?
No.
And he was going to skip out on pretty much all of these as soon as he could.
Essentially.
So I feel like it's just like a montage of panels of him walking into a classroom. The middle panel of that row is like him introducing himself as the class goes around. And then the last one is a shot of him leaving the classroom with like a clock next to the door or something, showing that he's only been there for like 15 minutes. So the one he walks in on, the clock is right next to the door and it's like 9 o'clock. Then he introduces himself, middle panel, and then the panel of him leaving is just like 9:10.
Yup. Exactly.
And that's the whole page. There's like four rows of that.
The only one I assume probably couldn't get away with that because I like making this character, like to focus around this character. Mr. Splash.
Ah, yes. Mr. Splash.
He's a smart cookie and doesn't fall for Todd's antics.
Okay. Yeah. So like you flip the page to the next one and the top row is the same thing, but the last of those three panels, him leaving out, there's a speech bubble coming from like the teacher's desk where Mr. Splash, this teacher who like I imagine him being tall, pale, wearing dark clothing.
Yeah, it's dark green clothing.
Yeah, dark green clothing. Where do you think you're going, Mr. Tabor?
I was gonna go to the bathroom.
I don't believe you asked for permission to go to the bathroom.
Well, can I?
Then just like a panel of a close-up of Mr. Splash and his eyes very slightly narrow. Mm-hmm. And the speech bubble just says no. What? How does Todd react to that?
I don't imagine the like dot 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 speech bubble next to him, since he's probably never been told no to going to the bathroom before.
Does he go sit back down?
And he goes and sits back down.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, and that's how Mr. Splash gained some respect,
dude. I love it. That's great. That's awesome. The panels for school kind of wrap up. What happens next? What's the tail end of the day in comic book form, so we can kind of just round this out?
Walking out the doors of the high school, probably side by side with Talia, saying something like, are you coming home? And him just going nah and walking the other way.
The next panel, her just a little bit in the distance, and she calls out, what do you mean nah? Where are you going?
Places.
And then next panel, her a little bit further away, and her yelling out, that's not a real answer.
The shadow of him lifting one arm to the sky, the other over his heart, saying, are there any real answers?
And then the next panel, her just a speck in the background and a very small bubble, speech bubble that just has her muttering, what an asshole. And I guess it's very telling that she just called after you and never tried to run up to catch you. Makes you wonder how much she really cares or how much effort she's really trying to put into this.
She's got to get to work. She can't spend too much time messing with me.
Sure, she can't stay around forever, and she knows that you're prone to these sorts of things. So the next panel, where does Todd end up?
He's going to go to the spring biome.
Okay.
Go lay in a meadow for a while. Just watch the clouds.
Cool. Yeah, so a nice artistic, maybe even a splash page. Maybe, yeah. Probably not. It's not really super exciting, unless there's great art in this comic book, which I doubt. But yeah, just a few scenery shots, I suppose.
Just enjoying the nature that we make.
Great. So what time does he end up getting home? Is it late?
Around 7:30 he makes it home. Probably hungry by then, knowing that there's probably some sort of small leftovers left from dinner.
Sure. And if you don't mind me kind of... actually, I'm going to ask you to describe to me what your home looks like, and then I'm going to kind of arrange the scene a little bit.
The building itself, I'm imagining, is like what... It's probably a lower apartment in like a... I'm thinking like a duplex.
Okay.
Small patio in the front. I want to say it's a brick building because it's older material and little. It's pretty run down looking. Like rusted railings leading up the patio, going through the door, the hallway light that splits the area from going upstairs to the top floor, and him walking to his house is flickering.
Of course, yeah.
You see the Delta little fly buzzing around it. He'll head inside. The door opens up into the living room / kitchen area. It's only blocked off by like one of those half walls that goes up to like just above waist level.
So I think when he gets home to this kind of crappy rundown apartments, walking in, at least for this particular evening, maybe it's not always the case, but on this one, what we're seeing in the comic book, he walks in and maybe he's even expecting to find his dad, you know, passed out in the living room. He's not there. The house itself is quiet. His sister still out, maybe just finishing up her shift. Maybe she took a couple extra hours. Either way, she's not home. His dad's not home. Same deal. Or maybe he works two jobs. So I imagine he probably goes to a bar once in a while just to like keep away from home. Same thing with your mom. She's also not in. Maybe she just naturally works later and you don't really even see her much unless she has a day off. This section of the book, these panels, is just following this young, cocky, assholish 14-year-old scrounge for himself in an empty house.
I raise you a little bit better.
Yeah, let's do it.
He'll call out anyone home when there's no response. The demeanor drops, and the sad 14-year-old who's really wishing he had a functional family comes out. That cocky grin he usually wears drops to a lonely frown as he goes around turning on as few lights as he can and scrounging some Kraft mac and cheese together for dinner.
A panel or two of just lonely macaroni and cheese cooking at a stove in this like poorly lit kitchen, like gross kitchen. It's super depressing.
You see the roach sitting on the wall right above the sink.
Yeah. That section of the book probably does it end on him just like quietly eating out of the pot on the couch or something.
I was thinking it ends with him sitting at the kitchen table alone, just with the food in a bowl in front of him, and just him looking down and just the word bubble sigh.
Yeah, great, good. I like that. Yeah, so I think that's where like the beginning section of Todd's first comic kind of pauses, the first chapter, as it would be. That was his first day of school, pretty much. He ended the day without anyone asking, how was your first day of school, and not really even having anyone to tell how it was. So I think that for like the next part, what I would like to do is just not go too heavy-handed into the loneliness aspect of this, but to just keep it in focus a little bit and we've already kind of talked about how, you know, he only has one really good friend. Otherwise, he seems to be fairly standoffish and kind of lonerish. So I think over the course of the next few days, you catch glimpses of him doing pretty much the same stuff. It quickly becomes apparent that he's doing all of these things alone. He's cutting class, and except for Mr. Splash's class, no one stops him. He's walking down the hall, and no one hardly gives him any looks. Is there anything you want to kind of, anything interesting you want to add to that? Those images, those visuals?
I'd say there's got to be at least one where, like, after school, he's going to be, like, laying in his room, trying to sleep, couldn't sleep, turns on a light and just picks up an old photo he keeps, like, probably under his pillow or something. He just looks at it, just see the little sniff word bubble come off of him. As a close-up, it's a picture of his family all happy together with his grandfather still in the picture. All of them taking a big family photo, maybe at a picnic.
Yeah, picnic, like at the spring biome where he was.
Yeah. Yes, in the field.
Look at that. All right, yeah, cool. Now we're cooking with fucking gas. Let's do it. Now we're cooking with feels. Let's go.
Yeah, let's put the fresh kid's life together.
Yeah.
Too real.
Too real. Oh my God, there's so much loneliness. For anyone who suffers from loneliness, our hearts, you know, we feel for you, because Alex and I are both also kind of lonely individuals. Alex maybe less so than me these days, but the point still stands. We all know loneliness to one degree or another, and it can be difficult to get through at times, you know, regardless of why you're experiencing it. And you know, I guess if you're one of the three people listening to this, just know that you're not alone. Because the Critically Accursed podcast is here, and you can totally reach out to us whenever you want.
And we platonically love all of you.
Yeah, Alex does. I don't understand the concept of love, but...
Chris, do you want to know what love is?
I do not want to know what love is. I do not. Oh, man. Yeah, I guess you and I just kind of needed a little bit of a refresh from all that depression. So, you know, we laugh because it makes the pain go away.
It masks it.
You did it. That's it. That's the end of the podcast. Fuck, dude. Okay. So I want to cut ahead to, you know, after all of this, probably ending on the still image of him with his family and his grandfather. Cut ahead to a scene outside of the school, about midday or something, sometime during the day where it's all too obvious that Todd is cutting class yet again towards the back of the school or near the side of the school, somewhere convenient to just kind of lay low and smoke a cig or two. Rounding this corner, he quickly finds that he's not alone at this area of the school. This I picture kind of, it's not an alleyway, but I kind of picture it like an alleyway. Access from like behind the school, maybe near the parking lot. It's kind of a secluded recess where there's probably a dumpster, like a future dumpster. Everything's future, has the adjective future in front of it.
It's they're connected to Wi-Fi.
They're totally connected to Wi-Fi. And they send emails to garbage collectors when they're full. So sitting on this future dumpster is a older woman, older girl. She's not, you know, she's obviously a student and she's obviously older than 14. You know, kids in the freshman class all have baby faces. I think the difference between a freshman and a junior or a senior are rather obvious and telling for the most part. And she's someone with long, wavy, light brown hair, seems to be on the taller side, but it's hard to tell because she's sitting. And she's wearing kind of the future equivalents of, I almost want to say like a leather jacket and tight fitting jeans. I would imagine that like the badass leather jackets of the future are like super cool and probably can like, they're probably smart clothes and can resize themselves a little bit. And they might even have like LEDs in them or something.
Oh, and they also have like a spot where you can change the pigmentation of the leather.
Yeah.
I'm feeling red leather today.
And there's a patch on the on her shoulder of a cute cartoon cat, but it has like ferocious blood dripping teeth. And the way the LEDs light up, it looks like the blood is actually dripping down her sleeve. And she's preoccupied looking at a phone and also smoking a cigarette.
Todd will roll up his cig and, noticing that she's a student, say, "Come here often?"
She gives you the sideways glance, like she's totally still focusing on her phone, but she definitely like looks at you out of the corner of her eye and then looks straight back down at the phone. And she says, "What's it to you?"
"A little friendly conversation."
With a smirk, she asks, "Shouldn't you be in class?"
"Shouldn't you?"
"When you get to my point, you don't really have to go to class anymore. Senior year is kind of a filler year."
"I mean, as a freshman year, too."
She chuckles, but she's still like actively on her phone. And I imagine it's almost a little confusing as to whether she chuckled at Todd's statement or she chuckled at something that popped up on her phone.
Todd definitely thinks she's laughing at his statement.
That's fair.
Because he's funny.
That's fair. But once she finishes finger pounding her phone, she'll glance over at you, kind of just like look you up and down and say, "You know, Eastwood, those are bad for you." And she points at your cigarette with hers. And then very slowly takes a long draw on her cigarette.
"Yeah, well, big drag. I'm feeling lucky."
She quietly nods, turns back to her phone, and doesn't follow up with anything, though she does like steal a glance at you every now and then, almost weirdly, like she's double checking to see if you're still there as she's texting on her phone. Occasionally she swipes a couple of times. She's both ignoring you and not ignoring you. Does Todd just kind of stand there and smoke for a little bit?
For a little bit. And when he sees she's not interact anymore, he's going to say, "Well, this has been great, but I've got better shit to do." He's going to, as he's walking past, after he flicks a cigarette, he's going to start walking past and he's going to say, "Nice to meet you, kitty cat."
Yeah, so you say that and begin walking past and you hear her behind you hop off the dumpster. And she just says, "Eastwood, hold on." Do you turn to look back at her?
Yeah, he'll stop, look over his shoulder.
She holds up a hand and kind of points at you as she talks. And she says, "Wait right there." She quickly turns and leaves the vicinity. And she had this, I want to describe it as a cute smile, like a cute, almost mischievous looking smile on her face as she said that.
His teenage mind is going to be racing. Either one of two things is going to happen. Something totally awesome he's going to brag to Robbie about, or she's probably going to get people going to go tell on him. Got powers. He's going to wait and see.
Cool. Great. He hangs out for a little bit and he'll probably hear her approach. It's like, it's a little bit later. It's closer to 10 minutes later. She comes moseying from like around the corner with her hands clasped behind her back. There's a little bit of a hop to her step.
"Long time no see, stranger."
She gives you a smile and a slight bow, and as she picks up from the bow, she holds up future car keys. So it's probably just a key fob. And she looks at you and says, "Do you want to go for a ride?"
"I thought you'd never ask."
With a grin, she'll turn towards the parking lot, hold up the key fob, and press a button on to it, obviously looking for the car it belongs to.
And
so once finding it, you know, she hops into the driver's seat. It's this nice stylish like metallic silver sleek car. It's a sports car. It's definitely like someone high up. If it's not the principal's car, it must be someone up there for the school for how expensive it is. You can smell it, like it still has the new car smell. It's almost intoxicating being in here. Can you describe to me the interior of a future car? A little bit? Like, is there anything particularly interesting or that Todd finds particularly interesting in this car? Outside of his female companion.
It being a sports car, it obviously only has the two doors, so it's got the smaller interior. I want to say because it is also a sports car, it actually has the wheel. It is retro so that the person who drives it has control over the car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rather than being mostly autopilot like most cars would be those days.
Right. 150 years in the future from today. She's pretty psyched about the steering wheels. You know, she like pats her hands against it and smiles and says, Strap in, Eastwood.
Pop into the seat next to her. Safety first. Clicks on the seatbelt.
Yeah, and even before you click it on, she kicks this thing into reverse and basically peels out of the parking lot. Alex, I would like you to tell me about this joyride through the city. Does anything interesting happen? How is Todd feeling? Or like, what's going on? I want to give the scene to you. So just tell me like what the next few panels of this crazy random crime adventure is like.
It's an absolute rush. Todd has probably done like maybe some small stuff, you know, like, oh, he hasn't had the money for like a snack he wanted. So he teleported and grabbed it and was out before his breath was up. But he's never done anything this big. And it's a thrill he's never felt before, especially with this girl he's never met. And we're racing through the streets, damn near clipping cars as she's weaving through traffic. And I want to say there's a point where as we're going down the street, we see a cop car flick on its lights behind us and start making the U-turn. She whips around a corner and takes a flurry of turns so fast that the cop car isn't able to keep up with us.
Yeah, and Todd, you noticed this, but like when she sees the cop lights in the rearview mirror, she was enjoying the ride before, but that seems to light something up into her, and she lets out, it's not a crazy laugh, but it's this laugh that's just like raw excitement. You know, like this is what it means to be alive. And she pounds on the steering wheel again. And yeah, she whips around that corner. And you're both getting thrown around in your seats.
Tyler shriek out a woo and just smack the radio and turn on some rock. And we hit the oldie station and Sabotage comes on.
And sure, after Todd woos and does this, she like laughs again and glances over at him and says, "I didn't take you much for a woo girl, Eastwood."
What can I say? You bring it out in me.
She does another sick turn around a corner almost just because, and it, like, she cuts off someone in traffic. It's a near collision, but you guys make it out relatively fine. I'm almost thinking there's like all this intensity of this absolute joyride, and then there's like just a few panels showing you guys like waiting in line at a fast food like drive-thru.
Oh, absolutely.
Like it's like three or five panels of like slowly moving forward, and like one of you is on your phone with your feet up on the dashboard, just like casually waiting.
God, future McDonald's has the best fries. They really stepped up their game.
She says, "I'm more of a future Burger King French fry person myself."
But have you tried the future nacho Taco Bell fries?
Have you ever tried dipping future's Wendy French fries into future Wendy's Frosties?
No, but I am a rebel who takes Wendy's fries and dips them in future McFlurries.
She leans back and she says, "I guess we're getting more fast food then."
Let's fucking go!
And she fucking does a U-turn in just like the middle of traffic. If you glance in the rearview mirror, you can see that she actually runs someone off the road. They crash into, I don't know, like a bus, a waiting spot for people who want to ride public transport. No one, you know, there. No one goes flying over the car, but it's definitely like a crash.
Oh, shit. Step on it.
And she totally does. And yeah, you guys have a rollicking joyride adventure. Probably try to time getting back before the end of the school day, just because I guess if the person whose car this belongs to notices that it's gone, that's probably a lot bigger problems than you guys have signed up for.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm imagining it's going to be one of those moments where it's like literally as the bell's about to ring, we get back in the parking spot.
Yeah, and you guys are just walking, like there's a panel of you guys like just walking away from the car just as the person who owns the car like walks into frame approaching the car.
Yep, exactly. And I'm guessing she's like drops the keys near the car so yeah. they can find them.
Right. Yeah. So him like walking over to the car, it's like he's patting himself down looking for the key fob. And then the next panel is you guys obviously further away from the car, maybe even glancing over your shoulders to watch as he's bending down to pick it up, kind of confused.
Yep. Exactly.
Good. And distancing yourselves away from that whole thing. Maybe even going back to the original meeting point, she looks at you, Todd, and she says, I don't know about you, Eastwood, but I learned a lot today in school.
I learned you're one hell of a driver, kitty cat.
I should get my license someday. And she pats you on the shoulder. Maybe we'll meet again sometime.
I can only hope. Best day I've had in a long time.
She kind of leaves with that. Except she stops again, like a distance away from you, turns around and like yells out, you were right about the nachos, by the way. Those were awesome.
Just wink at her and do the... Once she's out of earshot, like after she turns the corner, it's just a picture of him alone in the little alleyway and just be like, I think I'm in love.
Great. Cool. Then I think we can cut ahead time-wise a little bit and maybe do a little bit more of a montage-y thing to see how the, like, the next few days or even a few weeks go in school for Todd. You know, he's met this interesting yet mysterious older lady. But are there any interesting panels you would like to mention as we kind of skip time?
I'd say there's probably like one or two where he's out doing crazy things with the girl again. But they're few and far between. It's not a constant thing. And then maybe some him over with Robbie, like raving about his adventures he's having with her.
Cool. So, yeah, I think in terms of that, I'm assuming Todd's mood is kind of elevated across the board a little bit, too.
Oh, it definitely is much higher than it's been for a long time. He's in love, after all.
Right. So we see him doing some of the things we've described before, but it's just, you know, maybe there's kind of a more lasting smirk on his face as he does it.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine we revisit the spring biome again. And
oh, yeah. But along with relaxing, just taking it in, he's unlike where his demeanor may have wavered a bit while there sometime. He's just got a smile through and through now.
Towards the end of the montage, I do think there's a couple instances of like maybe him talking to this girl in the meeting spot. I'll call it the alleyway by the school, even though it's not necessarily an alleyway, but I'll call it that anyways. A couple of those, maybe one or two images of them doing getting up to more no good. I don't know. God, what do you feel? Give me two crime activities you might want to engage in with this woman.
All right, armed robbery and
okay.
Murder.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, let's just gun for becoming the BBEG right from the gate. No, that's cool.
No. No.
Hey, Alex, how'd your prelude go? Oh, pretty good, pretty good. I'm pretty sure I'm the bad guy now, though. So good luck, fuckers.
I'm going to guess it's probably something like petty theft, like distracting someone while I steal a purse or something. Then maybe using my power to break and enter, not take anything, but just like break into houses so we can walk around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least Todd won't take anything.
Oh, you're just there to enable and for the thrill of it.
Yes.
Yeah. And you probably even notice that like things like she steals, but the things she takes seem to be a little at random. So it's probably a lot less of like, oh, I want this item, and more like I could take this item, I guess.
The way she is, at least she's been described lately, it seems, I feel like she's more the person who just take like small trophies. Be like, yeah, I was here. I took this. I want to know if they realize it's gone.
Right. There's totally a couple of those instances in our mixed and the kind of the time skip montage. But towards the end of this montage, we see intermixed is a few images of Todd going to this meeting spot to hope to catch this girl who I don't think they ever share contact information. She's a little bit aloof about providing it. I imagine Todd being 14, kind of, I feel like he's getting in over his head a little bit. I would imagine he'd bring it up, but she always kind of seems to skirt around the subject or to change the topic.
Oh, definitely.
So there's a few times where he always meets her at the alleyway. That just seems to be the go-to meeting spot. Maybe they run into each other, you know, a couple different other places once in a while, but the alleyway is the spot to meet. And towards the end of the montage, he goes there a few times and she's not around. Well, not around more often than he expects. And what it becomes like one missed meeting turns into like three. And next thing he knows, like a week or two has gone by without him really seeing her. I think kind of at the point where you know, it becomes questionable as to whether or not he's even going to run into her again. We jump to yet another day at Horizon High. I'm going to be a little heavy-handed on this one, but I think it's thematically appropriate for this point in time and kind of for the setup for the tail end of this prelude. On your playbook, there are 5 conditions that generally describe how your character feels. They're all negative kind of feelings. Which one of these is most applicable to Todd at this point in time? Afraid, angry, guilty, hopeless, or insecure?
I got to go with insecure. He's probably thinking, oh, did I do something wrong? Should I have done more? Should I have, like, just given her my address so she could, like, stop by sometime even?
That makes total sense. And that's what I was looking at. So Todd feeling a little insecure, maybe out of habit, maybe honestly at this point just to go smoke a cigarette, because why not? Returns once again to the alleyway, except this time he does find this mysterious, older, mischievous lady once again sitting on the dumpster, phone in one hand, kind of just very casually scrolling through it.
His eyes will light up. And he'll, in his head, he'll want to just rush up to her and, like, show affection and all that. But he's going to play it cool and roll his own cigarette and just be like, oh, hey, I didn't even notice you haven't been around.
She takes a drag on the cigarettes and then turns to face you and gives you this kind-looking smile. Again, all of her smiles are a little mischievous. And she says, long time no see, Eastwood. And she kind of blows a puff of smoke in your direction.
I guess it has been a while, kitty cat.
You didn't get into a lot of trouble without me now, did you?
It's no fun without my partner in crime.
Her smile widens, and she flicks her phone a couple more times before turning it off and stuffing it into her leather jacket pocket. And she looks at you, Todd, and says, you know, I was kind of hoping you would say something like that. I have an idea for something that I think you can really help me with.
What's that?
Well, we've already stolen cars. We've stolen belongings. We've done a little bit of B&E. I think that things are getting just a little stale. And I'm hoping that maybe by aiming just a little bit higher, And she, like, reaches out and grabs you by the wrist and, like, takes hold of your hands. We could learn to live again.
What do you got in mind, kitten?
She pulls her hand back and you realize that she had slipped you a piece of paper. And she says, I need you to meet me at that location at 8:00 tonight. Do you think you can do that?
I'm sure I can.
It's a date, then. And she'll quickly pivot and leave the scene without saying anything else.
He suddenly gets, like, those anime eyes. The red goes across his face.
Woo.
Woo.
Senpai noticed me.
He's going to go furiously masturbate in one of the school bathrooms.
He is 14. we'll skip that scene, though. I think moving forward into that, you know, there's a lot of excitement, but I feel like he's still feeling that insecurity before. He still doesn't know, you know, why it took so long for her to appear again.
And, oh, yeah.
I think a lot of the insecurity is still lingering, maybe in the back of his mind. Yeah, does he just show up to the address at 8:00? What's the game plan?
He will definitely show up. He'll wear the nicest ragged clothes he's got. It's probably like a black shirt and the least torn jeans.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And it's dark by this point. And the note said to, you know, meet out back. And I'm sure he could find somewhere nondescript to kind of hang out and wait. And the location itself is not in downtown Horizon City proper. It's kind of on the outskirts of downtown. Not necessarily in the best of neighborhoods, but not in the worst either. It's kind of where commercial is starting to bleed over into residential again. And the address itself leads to a pharmaceutical company.
So it's like 10 minutes away from my house.
It might be like 10 minutes away from your house. Can you, Alex, give me an interesting name for a future pharmaceutical company?
Johnson & Johnson's. Oh, sorry. The Google Pharmacy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, you're right.
I like biotech, honestly, though.
Oh, Google Biotech?
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, Todd hanging out behind, it's a smaller Google Biotech pharmaceutical company. And, you know, the parking lot's pretty much empty. There's maybe a couple of cars there. And he waits before he hears and will quickly see the familiar sight of this woman moseying through the night towards him. She's still wearing her dark leather coats. Her jeans are black, and they're also torn up. She's a little retro like that. It's like she walks quickly at first, but when she notices you, she like puts her hands in her pockets and like casually, playfully starts swaying over to you. And she leans up against like the wall near you.
She's got legs for days.
She leans up against the wall near you, lights up a cigarette, and says, "So, come here often?"
I'm hoping by the end of this.
Is that what he says?
You know what? Fuck it. Yeah.
She begins coughing like she was inhaling when he said that and clearly wasn't expecting you to say just like say it like that. So she like coughs into laughter. Once she gets a hold of herself, she'll say, "I don't know. We'll see how the night goes." And she grinds the cigarette that she just lit on the wall behind her. And she'll kind of gesture at the Google Biotech and say, "It's kind of big stuff. You sure you're up for this?"
Pull out his face mask.
So, yeah, you pull out a face mask, and it's like she smiles and gives like a she wasn't expecting you to also pull out a face mask. So she smiles and nods and points over in the direction of obviously a rear door of the building. "What we need to do is we need to get through that door into the building proper. The unfortunate thing is to access through the door from the outside, they have biometric scanning." But she like closes the distance on you and puts her hands on your shoulders, and she like just like looks straight down at you, and she says, "But you and I both know that you have a way to get through that, and that door can be opened easily from the inside."
Moshetti. Hold out his arm.
She'll definitely like swing around and take it. You guys can approach the back door.
Take that big deep breath and let's bamf our way through.
You know what? Yeah. Why don't we do it? You want to roll some dice tonight, an hour and a half into this?
I mean, I'm not opposed.
Okay. So you're using your powers to overcome an obstacle, which is the definition of unleash your powers. So yep. This is a simple obstacle, but I think it'll be interesting to kind of see how you do and how this frames the narrative from this point. So I want you to roll your 2d6, and you're going to add your current freak score to it.
You got it. Wow. So that is an 8.
In masks, a 10 is considered a complete success. Yes. 7 to 9 is a partial success, and then anything below a 7 is essentially a failure. So yes. With an 8, you have a partial success. And what either happens is you mark a condition, or I will tell you how the effect is unstable or temporary. I don't think you teleporting through a door can be unstable or temporary in this particular instance. Mm-hmm. So what I would like you to do is Todd definitely, he holds his breath and he like steps between planes and teleports to the other side of this door. But why don't you tell me what happens because of that or in the scene that makes you feel one of these other conditions, either afraid, angry, guilty, or hopeless?
I want to say it's the fact that what he's doing is might finally just be hitting him. He's going to be, they're probably robbing this place. He could probably get in a lot of trouble if people find out that he did this. So he's probably a little bit afraid going into this now.
Okay, cool. So he's now feeling a little insecure, a little afraid for completely different reasons. But he pops over to the other side and effectively unlatches the door, unlocks the door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when he opens up, he sees his partner in crime standing in the now open doorway with a wide, mischievous cat-like smile. And she saunters through the doorway over to him and holds a finger to her lips, signifying to be very, very quiet. And she will begin leading the way through the halls of the biotech. Are you doing anything particularly interesting, or are you just going to follow her?
I want to assess the situation.
Yeah. You have extra things for this, too, for being a delinquent, don't you? For criminal
damn
minds?
Straight.
Oh, God, that's so fitting.
Yep.
Let's fucking roll. All right, so you're rolling your 2d6, and you're adding superior.
Yeah, I am. Oh, that's a 10. Wow. Another 3 and an 8.
Great. So on a 10, you get to ask two questions from the assess the situation list. Of those two questions, you include those extra questions from criminal mind. So you get me two questions total, but they can be from either list.
I think the best thing right now would be what's the best way past the cameras that would definitely be in here?
You assess the situation. You look around. It's very, very slowly beginning to move through these interior corridors. And note the futuristic security systems they have set up with whatever these future cameras look like. I imagine that they're really small, but you seem to have an eye for this sort of thing. You've watched a lot of crime movies as a kid, I guess. You think that the best way, the safest and best way to get by the security systems here is to get to the security room and at least temporarily disable them.
How could we best end this quickly?
So, like, she seems to know exactly where she's going. So why don't we say that the best way to end this quickly might even be to split up, to have one person go deal with the security system and then the other person go get whatever this woman seems to be so focused on here. And I would imagine that as you're assessing the situation, you realize you don't even know the exact reason why you came here.
So I'll probably pull her in at that moment and say the best way to get through this is to disable those cameras to either neutralize the guard for a little bit or get him away from the cameras. I'm 14. I don't think I can really do that. So why don't you tell me what we're after and I'll go grab it for us while you take care of the guard.
Eastwood, are you really telling me you're not up for the task? I think you're underselling yourself. This is how people like you and me feel alive. We're not meant to be stuck behind desks in a fucking school day in, day out for 8-9 hours. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And the things you can do, your capabilities, that's what sets you apart. That's what makes you different. That's what makes you the person to go deal with that guard in the security system. It's because you're so fucking weird that we're doing this right now. And I love it. And she's exerting influence on you to try to shift your labels. You can either accept it or you could roll to try to reject.
Well, I'm insecure right now, so that wouldn't end too great for me.
Well, do remember that when you fail rolls, you mark potential. So you always get something if you roll. The downside is if you try to reject her influence and fail, you end up shifting your labels and you take a condition.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to let it happen.
Yeah, cool. The thing she's telling you, she's telling you flat out, you're someone different. Just the way you act, it seems to mesh up. You know, you hate sitting behind a desk, obviously. You're not meant to just be a normal person. You are weird. You are different. And maybe that does give you the skill set to be able to do this. Your labels shift. You get +1 freak, -1 mundane.
All right. Got that written down.
Cool. So her having said that, what now? What do you do?
I think the best option is to start walking around and forcing myself to cry and make it seem like I'm lost.
Ah, doing a little bit of deceiving. Okay, yeah. So you're splitting up with this girl, right? You're going to do separate things, and you're going to take care of security, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so once you two have an understanding of that and begin going your separate ways, describe to me, again, kind of quickly in terms of, like, panels, how this looks. Like, what happens from here?
So he's going to work himself up into tears and he's going to start walking around aimlessly, loudly crying, being sure to get caught on some of the cameras. So hopefully the security guard will come and see what's going on. And from that point, he's going to use his "Are you watching closely" move to mislead, distract, or trick him into opening this opportunity for her to finish up.
Oh, man. Now we're playing masks. All right. Cool. So you are just 14. I feel like that totally plays into the age you're at currently. We see a few panels just like of different shots of you in the corridors of this biotech lab, this biotech pharmacy, playing up this, you know, crying, playing up this, putting up this little act. And you will eventually hear footsteps followed by someone, you know, a man calling down the hall. Stop right there. You shouldn't be here. And he's clearly dressed in, you know, he's an older guy, a little bit of a gut, dressed in a security outfit.
He's just going to kind of hold up his hands, say, thank goodness, my friends, they dared me to stay in here to hide. I'm sorry. I can't get out. I'm scared. I want to go home.
He looks perplexed. Like he holds out a hand, like just silently saying, you know, calm down. Don't worry. As he approaches.
Want me to roll now?
Yeah, let's do it. So you're rolling 2d6 plus superior.
Yes. That is a 9.
9. Great.
I get to choose 2 from the list.
Yeah. What 2 are you picking?
I'm going to go with confuse him for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And get the opportunity to have him lead me out of the building, giving her extra time.
So I imagine that, like, you confuse him for some time is you, like, just babbling your way through the story, this, like, ludicrous, yeah, sad story. And him, like, scratching his chin going, uh-huh. That doesn't really.
They got a waffle singer. They said I have to wear a mask because there's poison gas.
Masks? That's absurd. No one should wear masks.
And, oh, you're one of those.
And he says, there. I don't know the sorts of people you're hanging out with, son, but maybe it's time to choose better friends. Let me show you the way out of here. You need to go home straight away because you can't be in here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
He escorts you out the front.
Just after he gets out, after he lets me out, I'll just start walking away a bit until he goes back inside, wipe the tears from my face,
mm-hmm,
and head back towards that side door where I have a feeling she's going to be coming back out of.
Yeah. And you wait a little bit, just regain your composure, make sure that the guard's gone, that sort of thing. And then you make your way out back to the back door. So what does Todd expect to see around the corner? Like, he doesn't know what she's trying to get. Obviously, he's expecting to see her, but paint me the picture of what he expects to see rounding the corner.
I'm expecting her to have some sort of, like, small vial, like, oh, look, we stole this formula they were working on for something, like, the next bioweapon or some crazy like that, or maybe, like, the cure for cancer. It's 2172. They don't have a cure for cancer yet.
No, Google hasn't invented it yet, unfortunately. Yeah, so he's probably, at the very least, excited to see her, curious to see what she got, and his head filled with what ifs and ideas of what to see. When he rounds that corner, what he instead experiences is a swift and hard blow to the head. The
pow!
Yeah, the blow to the head kind of drops him to the ground. The world begins spinning. Everything seems a little foggy, and, you know, it's already dark outside, and he can hear voices, you know, some men talking, some people he doesn't recognize. You know, he's on the ground, so he sees, you know, feet and legs, and just there's maybe 3 people, maybe it's 5, maybe it's just 1. The world is spinning, and he starts feeling like sick to his stomach. One pair of legs with like torn black jeans moves towards him, crouches down, and moves him a little bit, so he's like looking up at the sky, and this girl leans over him and gives him this soft yet still mischievous smile, and she just says, my name is Tabitha. She stands up. I'm assuming that if he could, he would try to maybe even get up, or at least like look after her and not just stay laying on the ground staring up.
He'd try to at least sit up, I think.
Yeah, and as he's like as Todd's rolling around and trying to regain his composure and trying to sit up, but just the blow hits so much and the world is still spinning, he gets up just a little bit, like just onto an arm. He's able to like look down this road behind Google Biotech. He sees Tabitha walking with a large, broad-shouldered individual kind of behind her, and a boy about her height who takes a small item from her hand and then throws an arm around her shoulders. And the 3 of them walk off into the night as Todd's vision begins to fade. And what is his, like, last thought bubble before the comic closes?
That bitch.
And the last panel is black.
Hello, it's me, Mr. Critically Accursed, popping in at the end of the issue to say thank you for listening. I hope our opening look at the delinquent turned out well. If you think so, then the good news is that we have three more characters, three more players, and three more prelude adventures in the wings, just waiting to bombard your earholes with dice and drama. In the meantime, while you're waiting, if you'd like to reach out, please feel free to leave a comment wherever it is that you're listening to my voice right this moment. You can also find me over on the Twitter, @CAccursed. You can also reach out to Alex if you really want, I guess. He exists on Twitter, too. His Twitter thingy is @AlexPolen3. That's @AlexPolen, the number 3. Oh, and Raid Shadow Legends, if you want to purchase advertising space, you can shoot me an email. It's criticallyaccursed@gmail.com. I'll be waiting. But even if you are not interested in giving us $4,000 to endorse Raid Shadow Legends, we'd love to hear from you, so do not hesitate to reach out if you even consider it for like a second. Just do it. Don't think. Just do. But with all that, this episode kicked over a little bit longer than I wanted it to be, so I will catch you guys next time in issue number 3. You're a superhero.